Hi again, this is Mark. This is part two of the bank fraud presentation series, and I just wanted to share with you in the next few minutes some of my personal stories of things that I have done and been involved in as it deals with the money issue. If you've followed any of my writings or rantings prior to this point, you probably have a pretty good idea that I like to push the envelope. And I've always been one to take an idea and test it. Let's see if we can build an engine, see if it starts. Let's see if we can light this rocket and send it off. And there was a point in my life when I was fairly, you could probably say reckless or adventurous or any one of a number of similar terms. But certainly had a lot of fun with this stuff. So two situations I want to share with you. One has to do with CMOs, certified money orders. Very interesting learning curve went through on that. And then I was also on a second series of exploits. I was also quite actively involved in the early to mid-90s with the Montana Freemen, if you know anything about them and their history, which is really fascinating. I've made references to that in other parts of the website. You've probably seen that already. So let's talk about the CMO, Certified Money Order. We talked about negotiable instruments that the current of electricity that feeds the energy to our economic system is the currency, which is credit, negotiable instruments, money of account of the United States. All right, a money order is a demand to pay money. Now, we talked about definitions previously, and so if I'm going to give you an order for a third party to pay you money, that's a certified money order. It's a negotiable instrument which I could give you, and you can take that instrument to a third party and have them pay you money on my account. Okay? So it's pretty simple. Certified money order, CMO. There were a couple of very enterprising and well-informed groups in the early 90s that understood the money issue very, very well. They put out educational packets teaching people about these very issues, and they would issue, basically set themselves up as a bank. By legal definition, in the legislative code, a bank is a person or organization who is engaged in the banking business. All right? Now, we all know the Federal Reserve is not federal, it's private. It's a privately run family business. So if the Federal Reserve is issuing money of account of the United States, which has never been defined, otherwise known as legal tender or private credit, we know that the Anti-Sherman Act is a bar to any organization or group holding a monopoly on any part of the economy, any segment of business. Okay, monopolies are basically not tolerated due to the Anti-Sherman Act. When was it? Back in the 70s, there was a big case, Supreme Court case, that basically broke up the Ma Bell companies into, you know, Ma Bell dominated the telephone industry at the time, and everybody had to pay to Ma Bell. And so they broke that up into smaller companies based on, from what I understand, is the Anti-Sherman Act. Probably some of you will correct me on some of my history or technical aspects, but I think you get the idea. So these groups would educate people. They would act as a bank to redeem the CMOs, all right? So a money order is an order to pay. So the idea was real simple. It was written in such a way that this is, and I don't have one in front of me, so I'm not going to have it exactly correct, but the basic idea, to paraphrase, is that the certified money order would say something to the effect that this is an order to pay private credit money redeemable by such and such private bank. That's the group that was issuing the credit, private credit, just like the Federal Reserve, in competition. If the Federal Reserve can do it, why can't anybody else? It's in order to pay private money redeemable by Waxahachie USA Bank, payable in money of account of the United States at such a time that money of account is defined, or something to that effect. Money of account of the United States, which so far is undefined. Okay, so in other words, they're going to pay in private credit until such a time that the law is definitive as to what exactly is money of account of the United States, which presents a real dilemma for anybody wanting to challenge the instrument as being fraudulent. How can you say something is fraudulent, say, hey, this is bogus, this is fraudulent? How can you say this is not the real thing when the real thing is not defined in law, which is money of account of the United States? Has never been defined. You can't say it's fraudulent because you can't say what's real. All right? What are they issuing? All right, this CMO is redeemable by this private group or organization who is, by legal definition, a bank because they're engaged in the business of banking. All right, are they a corporate subdivision of the USA operating with a license and regulations and FDIC tied into the Federal Reserve and all the things of your normal community state bank? No. This is a private bank, private group of individuals simply interested in engaging in the banking business, issuing private credit. So what would happen is that the people around the country who would receive these educational and informational packets would get so many blank certified money orders. They would make the certified money order payable to phone company, IRS for taxes, you name it, okay, whoever they wanted to pay a so-called debt to. And the certified money order would be submitted with a cover letter indicating that this is not a Federal Reserve instrument. It cannot be deposited in the Federal Reserve Bank. To redeem this money order, you must present it to USA Bank First in Waxahachie, Texas, which is one of the actual entities that was engaged in this business. The other one was the Family Farm Group out of Tigerton, Wisconsin. And again, I go into all the details of my dealings in this in my book, One Free Man's War. But just to give you the gist of it, this is how it worked. You present a CMO as an order to pay to one of your creditors. They would then need to present it to the private bank in Texas, who would then issue a certified cashier's check, again, payable in money of account of the United States, private credit, and of course money of account has never been defined. And so it was pretty much private credit. You can't say it was fraudulent because money of account was never defined. And this was actually working for a while. Some groups would try to deposit the money order in their bank, and the Federal Reserve Bank would reject it, and you know, you'd have to go back and educate the people. Technically, this was absolutely correct, very correct in what they were doing. I mean, based on the law, these guys knew what they were doing. They were issuing private credit. The CMOs were redeemable. And they would get a certified cashier's check in private credit or money of account, which is just that. People say, well, you know, that's bogus. It's not real money. Well, what is real money? You can't tell me what real money is other than lawful money, which is defined by your Constitution as gold or silver. That's lawful money. But real money, we've talked about that. It's not defined other than credit. Credit from who? Credit by who? Credit for who? Okay, so we had some fun with this, and my first experience in trying to deal with this, I didn't have any debt myself to speak of at the time. I was very public with the radio show and weekly training sessions with the law club and things like that. So I wanted to be an example for other people. Okay, I didn't want to talk the talk without walking the walk. So a friend of mine, a German guy, he liked Mercedes. Imagine that. So we found a Mercedes for sale in the paper, and we made a deal with the guy. We made a contract saying, okay, we will issue a CMO. You redeem it according to the instructions that we give you. And he had a loan on the car, and he says, once your credit company, finance company, discharges the loan on the car and gives you the title, all right, then you can transfer it over to us. Okay? So any benefit to us was simply contingent upon him getting satisfaction and getting out from underneath the loan. Well, he did that. The bank did not follow instructions. They tried to deposit the CMO with their Federal Reserve Bank, which, you know, is mixing water with oil. Didn't work. And so we instructed him. And so then he followed the instructions. And he sent the CMO down to USA First in Waxahachie, Texas. It was at that time that the FBI raided the bank down in Texas. And they didn't arrest anybody because they weren't doing anything illegal. But they wanted to disrupt the operation. And so they came in and took all the computers and files and everything else from this private bank in Texas. But because nobody was arrested, the guys were back in business the next day. The bad news for me was that this CMO that I was hoping for clearance on was confiscated. And so nothing ever happened. That was kind of a dead letter issue. And nothing ever happened. And so that was a dead end. So these guys were back in business the next day. And so we continued in our process. We found another Mercedes, beautiful, Signal Red 190 SE. And I was in Denver. The seller of this car that we found was in Kansas. He was in Denver doing some business. We saw the car. We liked it. We made our deal. We made the contract. His financier was Mercedes-Benz Credit Corporation. We made the same deal with him, saying, okay, once Mercedes-Benz Credit accepts this instrument and releases the loan, the lien on the car, once you get free title, only then will you give title and deliver the car. So the bank accepted it, Mercedes-Benz accepted it, and released the lien, sent him the certificate of title. He notified me the next day. Everything was clear. He'd be down in 2 days, driving down from Kansas to deliver the car. We go, great. He did that. Everything was fine. Had a beautiful, beautiful Mercedes driving around for quite a bit of time. Eventually, there was a series of events that transpired, and I needed the funds. I ended up selling the car. I had clear title. Now, what was really interesting about that is that when all this went down, Mercedes-Benz finally figured out that they didn't have an instrument that they could deposit in their bank. Apparently, they had held it for some time. Then later, they tried to deposit it in their bank, and the bank came back and says, no, this we can't process this here. So they did not follow instructions again. And so that's when they started making some trouble. And the first thing they tried to do is they tried to repo the car. And I remember in our law club meetings we were holding on a weekly basis, at one point in time, I caught on to the fact that someone was trying to follow me around and see where I was at. And so I was able to avoid a repo by maintaining some security measures. And later, at our law club meetings, this skinhead guy shows up at the meeting. You know, shaved head, tattoos everywhere, you know, one of these types. And it's like, this isn't the profile of the person that comes to our meetings. And so later we got to talking, and he goes, yeah, you're the guy with the Mercedes, right? I go, yeah, how'd you know that? I go, well, they hired me to repo the car. And when they told me that, I found out that, you know, you had the certificate of title, he says, I complained to my boss, how can we repo the car if he has the certificate of title? And he, this guy says, oh, my boss just told me just to shut up and go get the car. And so he was scratching his head. And he goes, something's really, really weird here. And so he decided, he found out about our meetings, and he goes, I got to see what these guys are doing. This is kind of interesting. And it wasn't too much long after that that, well, you can imagine, you know, we're attacking the entire basis of a fraudulent money system with a competitive bank doing the same thing the Federal Reserve is doing. And in the process of doing so, it exposes the fraud of the Federal Reserve. Okay, so guess what? Someone's got to take me out. Someone's got to stop this process. So the repo didn't work. The next thing they did is they send the local TV news station, Channel 7, McGraw-Hill Company, Channel 7, John Ferrugia. I get into all the details in my book, but long story short, he sends an ambush interview crew to ambush me in the parking lot with slanted questions, biased. They weren't out for an interview. They were out to do a smear campaign, smear tactics, vilify, marginalize, and just make a story. Say, hey, this guy is wacko. He's a criminal on the loose. Channel 10 News. Watch out. Don't fall for his games. You know, the whole PR campaign in the public court of public opinion on 10 o'clock news. I said, hey, John, you want an interview? I'll be happy to give you a full interview, explain everything that's going on here. And the thing is, I want my own camera running. And you can't have a camera because you're just going to take sound bites. I'll educate you on the whole situation, give you the whole story so you understand what's going on here on those terms. And he said, no. He never took me up on it. So he wasn't interested in the truth. He wasn't interested in what was really going on. He was there simply as a hired hand out to do the public smear campaign on behalf of the bankers. Okay. Finally, they come up with charges, felony charges for fraud. And I was really, really looking forward to bringing this issue into the courtroom because I knew it inside and out, and I would have nailed it. I would have nailed it, and I was thinking to myself, well, this is a case to do something similar to what Judge Mahoney did in the Credit River case, if you're familiar with that, where he declared that the bank had no right to foreclose on the property because you know, of the fraudulent money issue here. And so I was thinking to myself, wow, this is a wonderful opportunity to get this on the record, to run circles around these guys, and I was fully prepared to do it. I'm not going to get into all the ins and the outs, but it was very, very interesting, a little bit testy at times. Long story short is the case never made it to court. The case never made it to court. They dismissed the charges, and You can read all the details in my book, One Free Man's War, if you want. So that was very interesting on the CMOs, and it worked almost by accident for me. It was entirely correct and legal by all means, but obviously it was competition to the mafiosos, and so, you know, you're going to get that kind of reaction. They will put it out, legal or not. It's dangerous to be right when your government is wrong. So the smear campaigns didn't work. The charges, they saw they saw the writing on the wall, and they didn't want this to get onto the court record, and so it never made it to court. And honestly, I was disappointed. They were really racking up the charges, all kinds of felony counts. Could have been, you know, a minimum sentence of 14 years in prison if they had convicted me. But I was really looking forward to getting this into court and making a precedent-setting case that, you know, chances are probably would have gone on, you know, for years with delay tactics and appeals and so on and so forth. But anyway, that's a story on the CMOs. Ended up with a nice Mercedes and had a nice ride for a while. Now, more interesting than that, if you can imagine, my experience with the Montana Freeman, and I'll just keep this really brief. The Montana Freeman, Leroy Schweitzer, Dan Peterson, Skirdall, Russ Landers, and a few others, are the most knowledgeable legal minds really in the country in terms of historical law, the Republic, the power of the people in the common law courts, commercial law. And again, you're going to have to get the details out of the book or elsewhere. But what these guys were doing is they were executing commercial liens on public officials for breach of contract, which is their oath of office, and for damages that were in the multi-millions, and in some cases billions. They would place commercial liens, which is a non-judicial process, means you don't have to go to court. It's a very simple commercial process involved in curing a commercial lien and making it final. The other party has every opportunity to remedy the lien before it gets into lien status, and of course they never do. I won't get into that process, but the point is that they had billions of dollars in commercial liens. They took one of these liens to their local bank in Helena, Montana. They deposited a lien. It was a small lien. I think at the time it was only for $500,000 or something. That's a small one that they had. Most of them were in the multi-millions. And the banker accepted the lien as a deposit. Okay, the lien is a commercial instrument. They were a secured party on a negotiable instrument that was asset-backed. Okay, the CMOs had no assets. They were just private credit. These liens were backed by the assets of the public officials that that were subject to the lien. All right? The bank, U.S. Bank in Helena, accepted the lien as a deposit, opened up a checking account, gave these guys checks. They could start writing checks against their $500,000 lien, which was now the deposit. Okay? Everything was kosher. These guys knew what they were doing. They knew proper banking, and it was working fine. FBI comes into the bank, takes the lien, shuts the account down. Okay? Without missing a breath, Leroy Schweitzer, understanding uniform commercial code, now understands that the U.S. government, i.e. the U.S. Treasury, is the holder in due course of these instruments and therefore liable to pay on demand against any demands made on these instruments as backing. So he simply shifted gears, whereby originally the local bank was paying the checks from the asset created by the lien. Now the U.S. Treasury was paying on the checks created by the lien. And these guys, in understanding the law, putting the appropriate UCC terminology on the warrant drafts, which is a form of a check, they were creating warrants for people to pay their mortgages, to pay the IRS, to pay credit cards, to pay this, to pay that, and just to prove their validity. And again, these are warrant drafts were created by Leroy on his home computer, okay, against the assets mentioned. And he would make these drafts out for twice the amount that was owed so that the people that were paying off their obligations would get a refund for the excess amount. So if somebody was paying an IRS bill of $5,000, Leroy would make the warrant out for $10,000, and the IRS would send a check for for $5,000 difference back to the person who originally sent in the warrant. I personally was involved in one of my cases in Colorado, and our common law court had removed the state case against me out of the state jurisdiction into the common law court jurisdiction, and to bond that action, we put up a $1 million bond drawn against the assets held by the U.S. Treasury. Now, that in itself is quite significant. In order for the state court to contend with the issue, they would have had to put up their own $1 million bond, so both parties had an equal amount at risk. All right? In commerce, you're dealing with liability, and if you create liability, you have to have a bond to cover that liability. And so if either side were to create damages to the other side, this bond secured those potential damages or liability. And so this was fascinating because it was working. It was working just like clockwork. The U.S. Treasury was paying these homemade drafts made by Leroy Schweitzer and his group, drawn against the assets, the registered securities, which were the liens, which were actually backed by the assets of the public officials that were actually the debtors in the liens. Fascinating what you can do with some knowledge. Now, obviously, not terribly politically correct. It's not a way to make friends in the U.S. Treasury, the IRS, or in the public venue in any way, shape, or form. The Montana Freeman came very close to having the feds drop in a shell from a howitzer cannon they had positioned about 50 miles away. And had they not been kidnapped when they were, there's a pretty good chance that they would have just been wiped out by that howitzer. They would have dropped in a shell, would have come in from nowhere. Nobody would have known what happened. Just, the whole thing exploded. Must have been a propane tank or something. Nobody knows. And these guys would have all been gone. So, obviously not something that anybody's going to do anytime real quick, unless and until we get enough public support and political support from the people to rise up against the bankers and start dealing with honest banking again. So, those are a couple stories that I had, and I'm not going to get into more just for time constraints, but once again, you can get more details in my book if you want to pursue that in any way or get the full details. So, lots can be done with knowledge. Knowledge is power, and I hope you can gain as much as possible with your activity here with the Lighthouse Law Club. All right? Thanks and God bless.